Hey there, animation fans, and welcome once again to the AFA Podcast, the official podcast for animationforadults.com. My name is Rachel, and joining me is my good friend, Dan. Hey, Dan.
Hey.
Yeah, we're back. It's been, I know for our listeners, it's been a while since our newest episode came out. So sorry for the delay, but it's been kind of a rocky road for all of us in terms of, trying to get schedules to match up. We've all have varying life demands, so I do apologize for being away for so long, but we're eager to get back into it and talk about some animation that has come out. A lot has come out since our last episode, which was our episode regarding the Bell film. So we're here to probably do a bit more of a casual water cooler as opposed to a deep dive, but
catch up.
I mean, Pixar put out a new film, which we're going to talk about. And there was also a film that both Dan and I are interested in talking about, or at least dissecting a little bit, as it were. Mm-hmm. A film that's both half animation and half live action. It's one of those CG combinations. And I know Chris and I have spoken on the previous film, but yeah, Sonic 2 came out. And that's not a phrase I ever thought I would say. other than applying to the video games, total shocker. Before the pandemic began, the first Sonic the Hedgehog movie came out, which, again, I don't know if we had. If I want to get your thoughts on this, Dan, because I don't think we had a chance to talk about how the lead up to that film, the first one, what a train wreck that was. Basically, they had to salvage a bad situation before they actually could put the movie out. Did you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, I kind of loved it. I kind of loved the drama. I did. I'm sorry. I was into it was one of those things where and this is obviously putting aside all of the hard work that goes into making a movie.
Oh yeah.
Especially the visual effects industry, but you just knew from watching the first trailer that it was oh my god, that design has come about because of 1,000 meetings, and mm-hmm. the 1,000 meetings have tried to please everyone and they have ended up pleasing no one. And I was mm-hmm. just kind of I was a little bit delighted that it was so awful, because I was just like, which is a horrible thing to say, but there was this part of me that was like, oh my god, they really don't know what they're doing. They don't get it.
No.
They don't understand the appeal of this thing. And then there was all the horrific backlash, and then they went, okay, we're going to rework it. But then they said we're actually going to delay the film. And I loved that, because it was this reckoning with the fans being babies, saying we want it, and it's look, if you want it, it's going to take longer. And
yes,
everyone kind of accepted that. They weren't furious, because they knew that it meant redoing a lot of work. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I'm sure it was still probably an absolute pinch to get it done.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, especially when they had to get Tyson Hess to come in to do the redesign for Sonic, for sure. From that god awful monstrosity.
It's kind of it's a nice thing that they listen. Because I feel it was kind of, okay, so the movie came out. Actually, a few things at first. The movie came out and I watched it, I think, most people, it was the last movie that I saw before the lockdowns.
Yeah, same.
That kind of lasted all year and into the next one a bit. And I didn't go to the cinema for a year, I think. It was about a year. After that point. Mm-hmm. So it kind of has this sort of bittersweet sort of that wasn't the greatest movie in the world. I remember it was, I think I had to admit that it was a bit more cohesive than Detective Pikachu, mm-hmm. everyone expected to be the bigger hit. But Sonic was, I don't know, it was fine. I think it was, they kind of got the character right, and they kind of did something interesting by, you know, trying their own thing with it, because they had to make their own story with this, like, cop character, and, yeah, I don't know, I thought it was fine. I laughed quite a few times, but I think I kind of forgot about it. And actually, the funny thing about that movie, I think it's like, I think it was the highest grossing film of 2020 in many respects. Which
I
is,
think so.
Which is kind of, you know, I like that. Anyway.
Me too.
How was it for you? Like, what's...
Again, I kind of was, you know, when the first trailer came out, where you saw that god-awful monstrosity that apparently a lot of people thought was the right thing to go for, but everyone else was like, no, how... No,
well,
one
that
is...
was the thing. That was the thing that I kept on, like, sorry, but like, yeah, that was the thing that kept on, like, weirding me out about the whole thing. Was like, is no one mentioned that this is like a bit, like, it looks off?
Yeah, like, has there been no involvement from Sega? I mean, Sega has to be involved because it's their license.
You'd think
it would be.
It's not even like, was there involvement from Sega? It was. Was your involvement from, like, your teenage children, like, going to the executives, like, being like, oh, Dad, that looks kind of lame, like, and then going, it was just, like, there was a kind of arrogance in it. And it was kind of like a reminder of, oh, my God, movies are made in such a vacuum. Anyway, yeah.
But no, yeah, like, but then, of course, you know, since I consider myself one of the less crazed Sonic fandom, you know, I enjoy the games. I enjoy the characters. I have a lot of nostalgia for it. So when I saw, you know, the new trailers come out and saw the new design, I'm like, okay, this is looking a lot more promising. This might be enough to get my butt in a movie theater seat. And, you know, I was able to find one friend at the time who's like, oh, yeah, I also like this. I'd be curious to check it out. And so we both went to the theater and we had a wonderful time. Like you said, it's not a spectacular movie. It's not, I would just classify it in the good category. This reminded me of, like, say, one of those, not necessarily corny, but just kind of those, like, those family films that I watched growing up. The character just happened to be.
It works and it kind of like sticks the landing. Whatever it's trying to do, it kind of manages to do.
And
I did
think, though, as soon as, aside from the redesign, I think what really got my butt in the seat, though, was the fact that they cast Jim Carrey as Robotnik or Eggman.
I think that was the reason the movie, like, crossed over at all to outside of Sonic fandom, because it was Jim Carrey doing a goofy role that he hadn't done for a long time.
It's been a while since he's allowed himself to go that zany in a role. And I will give him points as someone, again, who has a lot of rose-tinted glasses for this franchise. He did something with the character that I haven't seen really outside the comics, where is actually making him both funny and intimidating at the same time.
It's a good mixture. I mean, he kind of did the same thing with a few other characters he's played before, like the Riddler. Who was the Riddler?
Oh yeah, the Riddler. Yeah.
In Batman Forever, remember? And like I think he did like a pretty good job with that.
I think he did too. That movie overall was pretty silly, but in terms of actually within its own silliness making sense, and that was a good one. That was a good performance. But there was also a lot of lines that were just, you know, half with Jim Carrey and just half situational. Like, one of my favorite scenes is when Sonic's being told to wait in the truck when he's, you know, they're, you know, basically he's traveling with the police guy to try and get away from Robotnik. And he's being told to wait in the car while he goes and gets stuff. And then he just sees all this awesome stuff happening, this bar, and you just see him just starting to, like, hyperventilate, like, this is the coolest thing ever. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, that is actual teenager. Like, that's
Yeah.
Again, it wasn't the exact what I've come to know from that character. And the same goes for when we talk about the sequel. They're definitely doing their own interpretation of Sonic's character. But what I like is that they're actually, because canonically, quote unquote, he's supposed to be a teenager. He is behaving like an actual teenager.
Yeah.
I like to see it.
I mean, this is leading up to like the second movie, right? That yeah. came out kind of on, like, was it like the anniversary of the first movie? Was it not? No, it wasn't at all, because it was April. Anyway.
Because the first movie came out in January. I remember that.
The point is that I saw this movie with my friend who I saw it with, who I saw the first one with.
Right.
And it was the first time that we had been to the cinema together since 2020. Mm-hmm. And he is, I just misgendered them. They are.
That's okay. That's all right.
A big, big Sonic fan. Like, they've always kind of loved Sonic, like, I think since. I think, like, literally since they had, like, a Dreamcast and...
Like, if they were asked to pick between Mario and Sonic, they'd pick Sonic all the way, right?
Oh, no doubt. But also, like, I was a Sonic kid in that, like, mm-hmm. my dad had we called it a Mega Drive in the UK, a Genesis. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think, like, the first video game I ever played. And I loved that Sonic. But for my friend, they love the Sonic Adventure games.
Sonic Adventure, yeah.
Give him a little bit, like, they started to give him, like, a bit more of a beefy kind of story.
Yeah, yeah.
So we watched the first one, and they were like, that's actually a good Sonic movie. They were pleased by it.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, like, that's kind of all that really matters in that case, is like, look, to the
fair enough.
But we saw the second one, and afterwards they're like, and I think the second one is fine, but they were like, oh no, there are a bunch of like references, like in every setup, in every frame, like there is something that like is them telling you, we know, we got this kind of thing. And I was like, okay, right, that's interesting. But as a movie, I still kind of felt like, I was like, why is 10 minutes, like 15 minutes of this film devoted to a wedding? Of characters that we don't really know. I mean,
for a very weak payoff, too. For extremely weak payoff that we get to.
I mean, it just felt like a movie from, like, 2005 or something. And I don't mean that as, like, a slam. I just mean, like, I haven't seen a film like that for a long time. Knuckles was very good. And actually, Jim Carrey was very good. And the best stuff was...
He was even better. He was even better than he was in the first one, because all pretense of him... you know, being like a pre-Eggman, fully embracing just like the inherent insanity that you see from the actual character in the games and such. Like, I was just like, mwah.
It was delivering on that. I mean, because I think that's kind of what I wanted from the first movie. Because I remember the first trailer had like, had him on the Mushroom Planet.
Yep.
And that was the end tag of the actual movie. And I'm like, don't put that in your first trailer, because I'm going to expect that to be like the last third of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but animation wise, like it was pretty great. And I think they've kind of by now, like, they've got like a nice balance between like the cartooniness and the fact that he has to kind of live in the real world as well.
Yeah, apparently being adopted by two human people, which I'm like, you know what? Yeah, fine. I can accept this kind of heartwarming.
Yeah, not just adopted in like a, oh yeah, he's like our weird like roommate who like lives with us and whatever. Like, it's like, no, like they actually really lean into the whole thing that he is their son.
I think that's cute though, because I'm sorry,
like, I don't know how to feel about that. I thought it was a bit weird. Sonic doesn't need a dad.
No, he doesn't. But you know what? Well, here's the funny thing: He doesn't need one. So he's never really had one, at least in terms of like other like sources or source materials. Like he's never really had one. And I'm just like, I thought it was kind of novel and just kind of sweet, but like, you know, it doesn't need it. It's just something that this movie's story is just doing differently.
Not fair, at least. Fair enough.
But I will also say, just the last note on the this movie, I really liked how they played out the whole, because one of the bigger selling points of the sequel was the fact that two other iconic characters from Sonic's franchise roster, Tails and Knuckles, make their appearance here. And I think they were both used very well. I think the trickiest part was going to be getting Knuckles right. I think they did spot on.
Well, Tails kind of as well, though, because like, I think it's easy to make Tails look easy.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, Tails has to be kind of lovable. And I think they kind of pulled that off very well. But Knuckles, is as a kind of like, like a himbo.
He's such a great way
to play it. That was fun. I kind of have to really quickly just swerve this train that we're on.
Okay, sure, go for it. Let's choo-choo in the other direction. Where are we swerving
to? Well, like the Chippendale. Like this is making me, because like Sonic is making me think of that. Like it just is. And I think it's out this month. The Kiva.
What was that called? I'm sorry. When we get the name one more time.
Chippendale Rescue Rangers.
Oh, Chippendale Rescue. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like, what's the deal with that movie? Like, I am rooting for that movie.
No flipping clue.
I am rooting for that movie, but right as of the second, it feels like it's not going to quite work because of one massive problem.
And what's that problem for you?
The fact that the movie is about adult 2022 Chippendale, and it's about how one of them gets the surgery to change from 2D into CG in this world, because it's a surgery. Have you not seen the trailer for this?
I have. It's just been a while, and the more you're talking, the more it's coming back to me. I'm like, oh yeah, like I don't know how I feel. I don't know how I feel, honestly.
I really want it to come out and for the movie to be so good that it doesn't bother me. But right now, it's kind of, anyway.
I feel you. It's just like, I'm kind of at like that. I'm at a crossroads with that because of that trailer. I'm like, concepts, like, okay, kind of intriguing, but also kind of terrifying a little bit.
Yeah, I want to like it, and that's what I'll say for now.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I guess that's it. Anyway, sorry. Like I said, I was deriving for a second there.
No, that's okay. We've always that's been a constant in this podcast. So,
Sonic 2 thoughts, like what you want from? I mean, without spoilers, I guess. Like what? You want
from the next post credit
scene. Like, where does it go?
Depending on how they handle it, because I think this is, again, it's always going to be a matter of like, much like the sequel, how they approach it and how they want to adapt it is going to be it. Like, what elements do they pick and what elements do they take away or change?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be, that will depend on whether it's a success or not, especially with the elements that they are about to bring in. And also big key factor, whether or not Jim Carrey's actually retiring from acting or not, and whether, because they don't, I don't think, at least from what I read, I don't think they're going to try recasting him if that's the case. So the third film might just not have Eggman as a factor, which would be interesting. You'd lose part of its appeal without that actor and his charisma. But
you're kind of right. I'm wondering if they can't make him a CG character as well.
I don't know yet. Deepfaking has gotten pretty good recently. So we'll see.
Does the movie really need, I think it does, doesn't it? Like that live action element to tie it to. Otherwise, it's just like at that point, you're like, well, then just make a Sonic Boom film. Like,
Well, they've already, set up the antagonist for the third film, which I'm like, yeah. Okay, yes, good stuff.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, cool. Well, I guess that's
Sonic, but right. We'll jump over to Disney and Pixar because I mean, while we hope to maybe do a deep dive into this film at another point, both of us have seen this film and we both have just a few initial thoughts to share on it, and that is Pixar's Turning Red, which is I think that when did that come out? That came out on.
That was early March.
March release, if I'm not mistaken. It took me a little bit to finally get a chance to watch it because, again, my work schedule has been kind of all over the place. And just, again, I have to be very careful about picking and choosing what I have time to dedicate my relaxed time to. I did get a chance to see it probably about before the end of March. How about you?
I saw it like opening weekend. Well, yeah, unfortunately, not opening weekend in the traditional sense because it was... I was annoyed that Disney put it on Disney Plus.
Yeah, like it was not in theaters at all.
There was actually
brain theaters.
It was kind of around the time that I think Omicron was surging and people were nervous. But
yeah,
I have to say, like that didn't stop Disney from putting out other things around that time, and other movies were doing fine, and I just didn't really understand what they were doing other than, and I mean like it's a conspiracy at this point, but like kind of punishing Pixar for making an original movie and not make, because like Lightyear is going to be in cinemas. I watched it opening week and it just destroyed me, like But the most important thing isn't, because like that's kind of like a given at this point. Like if there's a good Pixar or Disney movie, you're like, oh yeah, it destroyed me. Like hit me in the field, whatever.
Yeah, it's like that's nothing new for Pixar. Someone from the audience shouts. It's like,
the most refreshing part of this movie was the fact that it was funny.
Yeah,
it was so funny and like a knee slapper, and I was every. Scene there was like a surprise, and the surprise was like either some slapstick or a really funny expression or just like an awkward moment, but it had this kind of energy to it that I actually think was the most refreshing part. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of like TV. Like that's how TV animation has been for a while. It's been that kind of energy, and it was just great to see it done feature level with that kind of like budget for like, you know, because the film looks fucking gorgeous as well, like it's great.
I love its unique look. Like if you put this film up next to a lot of other Pixar films just in terms of its style, it looks extremely different.
And the message of the film, I think I really appreciated as well, because it could have easily have been, hey, this excitable, confident young girl needs to be taken down a few pegs. And it wasn't saying that at all. It was saying, like, this, she just needs to find her people or her path, and, like, I just adored it, and it was the first Pixar movie in a long time that I've bought the art book for. Like immediately, I was like, "I'm buying the art book now." And,
I'm not far off from that either.
I haven't
like,
done
I've
that
got
since,
like a list of art I haven't books done that, that since, I've just moved up the list.
Yeah, I haven't done that since Monsters University. So you know, it was a good movie, and I think it was. Obviously like a special movie for like many reasons, but you know, the frankness with which it was dealing with, I mean, the fact that it was written, directed, and like spearheaded creatively by a team of women, I think meant that it did have a different kind of sensibility overall.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that part of it. And I also loved how it didn't, or rather it did, it didn't feel like it was tempering itself either too much. Like there were lots, there are little bits and pieces here and there about, you know, immigrant life.
Mm-hmm.
And second generation like immigrant lives, you know, that just weren't explained, but just sort of were presented, and they expected you to sort of, you know, figure out yourself. And I always appreciate that kind of thing.
Yeah, it doesn't need to explain itself about how things the way they are in the relationships between the grandmother and the mother and May. It was a very well put together film. It was, like you said, it was a breath of fresh air, I think, for Pixar, that I think that deserved a lot more credit in terms of, again, I would have made sure to go see this on the big screen had that been offered to me. And I know, again, props to the crew for sticking, for it seems like sticking with their guns in terms of like making sure that this film told its story a certain way and getting that, you know, and being able to put that story to animation was very good. And I have been looking for reasons to watch it again, because like you said, it's extremely funny. Like just like the, out of the very first scene with just, you know, when May's just talking about her, how her life is, and just begging and just being absolutely silly. And then, of course, the first time you see her as the Red Panda was just, mwah.
Yeah.
I was just really surprised by the mother, though, how far they went in with her in terms of just like, okay, this is the dynamic that we have between these two, how overprotective she is. And it goes to some interesting places. Mm-hmm. But I will save those.
But it really goes to those places as well. It's not just like hinting at them. It's a deep dive.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so hopefully we'll have a chance to do a deep dive like that for this particular movie at a later date when we have you know, a few of the others on board with that. But I'm very much looking forward to that. But all in all, if you haven't, for whatever reason, if you haven't seen Turning Red yet, that is a very high recommendation, I think, from both of us.
Oh yeah. It's still my favorite animated film I've seen this year.
Mm-hmm. There's actually, it's kind of funny how for me at this point, those probably, if I had to pick my two favorite animated films, it's a very close tie between Belle and Turning Red at this point. Both are coming of age stories. And I'm not sure if you've seen it, but there was a really super cute piece of artwork. I'm trying to remember who drew it. I think was it Mabel who hosted us on?
He
has a drawing of Belle with May from Turning Red.
Yes.
And it's so cute.
Yeah.
I really like it. It's one of those cute little things that you probably wouldn't see otherwise if you weren't like a diehard fan of both of these films, but that you just have it's this cute little picture of both May and Belle holding hands, and it's so cute. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, you know, I did see it. Yeah, I remember now when you mentioned that. Man, we're talking about things that happened so long ago.
I know. I mean, it's been kind of hard to kind of like stretch my brain to go all the way back. But again, no. I think these, at least for sure, you know, Belle and Turning Red have left a bit, you know, impression on me that I'm willing to go back and rewatch them. Like, I know for a fact, since Belle recently came out on DVD, that I've had a chance to rewatch that movie, and I've been sharing that movie again with anyone I can get my hands on. I shared it with my mom just last weekend, which was a lot of fun.
Interesting.
And
what does she make of it? Because I think, like, I wonder, like, the difference between watching that like kind of watching Summer Wars, like when it came out, like 10 years ago or so. No, longer than 10 years ago. You know what I mean? Did it, you know, the internet being much more like everyone's life, did that go down easier?
So that didn't really, at least when I first talked to her about it after we watched the movie, that wasn't something she was immediately thinking about in terms of, like, I don't think it's just because she's generally not, aside from like streaming and watching stuff, she's generally not on the internet as much. But, you know, once I talked it out with her, like we kind of, you know, came to that conclusion. It's like, yeah, this is a bit more, you know, the internet that you see in Summer Wars is different than the version of the internet we see in, you know, in Belle. And she did say that the whole idea of the body sharing or the bio syncing thing freaked her out a little bit. She said that was real. That's actually really freaky. And I hope that never happens, is what she said.
Well, I kind of like that it is freaky because it's a little bit like this feeling. I like kind of like the feeling like, oh, look, there is a weird cost to doing this. Like what's it they say about Facebook? Like, if the product is free, then you are the thing that's for sale.
Oh, God. yeah, like, shit.
Right?
Whoa!
Yeah. Yeah, good. Yeah, Tony Red, good.
But I will say, I will say in regards to her thoughts, I think she, well, again, some of the jokes, or I wouldn't say jokes, but some of the, like, stuff that was like say a bit of comedy that was translated from Japanese to English, that still had a rough time landing for her. She would always kind of look at that and be like, that's weird, and then move on. But other than that, I think this was definitely more of a, compared to, I think when we talked about it, she said there were a lot more things in Summer Wars I didn't quite get because it seemed it was a lot more centered in, you know, Japanese like family tradition, etc. Whereas with this movie, it was a bit more universal.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, that's kind of what we all felt too, from more or less. No, she the emotional points hit the exact same points where it was supposed to hit, especially at the climax of the film. And I will tell you though, I had during the middle of the film that we discussed when I'll try to be vague in case, you know, people wanna avoid spoiling themselves, but that point in the movie where after you've seen it once and you go back and see it again, you know what's happening, and you, at least it makes me like have an emotional reaction every time I see it now from the film, every now, you know, going forward. I had to bite my tongue so hard so I wouldn't spoil it for my mom, and I'm like just kind of holding her hand, I'm just like, oh, sorry, I have to get through this. And she's like, wait, what's going on? I'm like, just let's get through the movie first. We'll talk about it later.
Right. Okay. I think I know what you mean. The middle part of the movie.
Yes.
The literal midway point of the film. There's a scene where something is going on and you're like, oh, this is, yeah, and it means
this is odd, but then you watch the movie a second time and you know exactly what it is. It's just like, pardon my language.
What else do we want to? Oh, I mean, like, so are we kind of done with like Belle and Turning Red?
I think so. I think that's a good place to pause. Yes. I would say, you know, if it's Belle is a bit more widely available now, if people want to check it out, so absolutely. By all means, if you haven't already, you haven't listened to our episode about the film, please go listen to that. I will say, in terms of just wanting to share with any, unless there's something that you want to jump in with, since I know our time is a little bit limited today.
Right.
There is a, as people who have, you know, at least a toe in the Japanese anime industry know, that every season there's always like a slew of shows that come out every season. And it can be really hard to pick out which ones you want to watch.
Remember. I have not done that for a long time, but
I'm
glad to hear it still happens.
Yeah, no, it's like it seems to get worse every season, where it's just like sometimes there's just so much stuff that comes out that even looks remotely interesting. So it's just like, oh my God, what do I pick? Well, fortunately, at least the first one of the shows that was coming out this season wasn't that hard for me to choose, because I already had been roughly familiar with like the first couple volumes of the manga and had been very impressed by how much this manga made me laugh. And so I'm like, I'm very excited to see it put to anime form. And that is, if people who might be have already seen it might know what I'm talking about, it is a series called Spy X Family, which is, from what I can tell, is set in kind of, it's like a fantasy, what's the time period? It looks like, I'm trying to think, what's your like, I forget what the exact year is or decade, like, but like classic, like Cold War kind of style, like technology and such. And it's a country or a continent split between the East and West. Tensions are very high right. And between them, but outright war has not happened. So, you know, there's a war behind the scenes conducted through, you know, international like spies. And the plot kicks off with one such spy of the West, who goes by the codename Twilight. He doesn't really have an actual name because he's been a spy his entire life, basically, since he was inducted into this organization. He's basically become their like James Bond, more or less. He's a master of disguise. He is, you know, a expert at infiltration and, you know, getting the job done. And one of his latest missions is, well, there is a guy in the East who we're thinking is going to start, might be in the process of getting the country up in arms to invoke an actual war. So we need you to, you know, infiltrate the East and basically find out as much about this guy as possible. And here's the best way to do so. And here's the kicker. You need to get a surrogate family and have your child attend the same school that this guy has his kids going to school.
Oh my God.
And use that as your in. And he's like, what? Okay, fine. I'm a spy. I'm going to do it. And so he adopts a child, you know,
okay.
Little, no questions asked, a little tiny 6-year-old named Anya, who he has no idea is a telepath, and she loves spies. So she can read his mind and be like, oh my God, I'm being adopted by a spy. This is so flipping cool. And then he, I think it's the very next couple chapters, he finds a woman who they eventually come to the agreement, like, hey, will you be my quote unquote wife? And right. The reason why she agrees to this is because, well, the day job that she does is not her actual job. She's actually a super assassin for the East and is looking to be, it's like, okay, maybe if I'm a mother, this will be a good cover for my actual job. So my daytime colleagues don't stop asking questions. And so the plot just kind of kicks off of basically as the quote unquote mission unfolds of basically the two parents keeping secrets from each other, like having literally no idea who the other, you know, each of them are. They're basically completely buy into the aliases that they've come up for themselves. All the while their 6-year-old surrogate daughter knows exactly who both of them are. And so when they're constantly having their inner monologues of stuff that they actually do, you just see these wonderful surprise expressions from the 6-year-old. And it's a very well played, at least in the concept alone, is a very fun gag manga. And it's been a joy to see it come to life in animation by Studio Wit and Cloverworks. And I think they've about
Wit.
Yeah, right. Studio Wit.
Cool.
And I will say
I'm curious to check this one out. Is it has it been going for long?
Not too long. It came out relatively recently. It's about, I think, 4 to 5 to 6 episodes in, I think.
Oh, right. Okay, so it's a very new series.
Yes. But it's already taking a lot of it's already made a lot of waves within people, you know, the anime community, because people look at Anya and they're just like, this is the most precious thing that has ever existed.
Right, okay. And Is it like an ongoing series, or is it like finished? Like the manga, has that finished?
The manga is not finished, because all in all, the manga hasn't really been trying to resolve a lot of its plot lines. It be as a gag manga, it revels in a lot of just like the fun.
Oh, it's a g right. I see. Right.
So it basically, I mean, there is like occasionally there are subtle movements forward toward the plot, because
Yeah.
there's actually in the manga, not to spoil how it happens, but Twilight actually is able to encounter his target and actually meet him face to face, even if only for a brief moment, to just kind of get the, okay, who is this guy really? Because we don't, there's little to no information we've gathered about him. So this is an opportunity for me to learn more about him. But the story knows, I think the manga knows, like, okay, all the cool spy stuff is the nice, is cool backdrop,
Yeah.
but we're really just here for the fun, funny shenanigans that small child gets into while she's at school, because she's again a telepath.
Right,
And
I see. So, right, that sounds a lot more fun to me, because I was thinking like, that sounds fun, but like it's not. Where does that story go? And I guess it is the fact that it doesn't really have to go anywhere, but it's more of a comedy.
yeah, it is a comedy first and foremost. Like, it doesn't mean like there aren't more, like, I wouldn't say serious moments, like, because it really hasn't had a chance to, it hasn't really been around long enough to really earn that yet. But there are still like some other subtle things that they've hinted at, like, Anya's background, which they really haven't touched, but they don't, it doesn't seem like, it doesn't seem like she had a good time, because she was made a telepath. It looks like there was some scientific experimentation going on early in her childhood. And like there, that
Oh.
is underneath the surface. But the
Yeah.
manga hasn't really set, or the story hasn't really needed to delve into that,
To
because there's
go
no
there.
need to.
Yeah.
She's This girl is living her best life with a super cool mom and dad, who in her mind, she's like she has this line. It's like, "Dad's a bad liar, but I like him." Because, again, she's a 6-year-old, and she doesn't want anyone else to know that she's a telepath, because she thinks if they know that, they won't want her.
That's kind of sweet. That's kind of
Yeah.
sad and sweet. Yeah, I like the sound of this one. I also watched I only watched like the first couple episodes because I had a Crunchyroll trial, but then I started working on something and then I suddenly didn't have any time to watch anything. But I watched that show Ranking of Kings.
Yes. Oh, that is so good. I
You
love
seen
that
that?
very much. Oh, yes. I haven't finished it all the way, but
Nor have I,
I
yeah.
got like a decent chunk into it.
Really sweet show and
Oh
very
my God.
surprising and nicely made and
Oji
like
is
the
my
anime.
hero.
Yeah, the animation itself is fun, but like most things like that, what keeps you watching is the characters and
Yeah.
they're very interesting characters. But yeah, no, I haven't been. Man, I feel like this is just like a given at this point with me, but I haven't been watching enough because I've been making animation.
Exactly. No, so you're
But
good. You're good though.
yeah, I mean, I think in the next month we might hear something about the thing that I was working on,
Ooh.
a show I was working on Netflix, which has been announced, called Dead End, Paranormal Park. Which is not, sorry,
Aha.
I'm not used to saying that title because it's not the title that we were working under.
That's okay.
That should be coming out soon. I don't know when.
Okay.
And I cannot say when, but I will say keep your eyes peeled and
Yeah.
you'll see what we were working on. Like, oh my God, I mean, it's not like so long ago, but like the way these things work is I'm in storyboarding, so storyboarding happens relatively early. Like it's kind of considered
It's
pre-production.
pre-production.
Well, yeah, by and it kind of is. So, my part on this ended a while ago, but finally, it's ready because everyone who has been hard at work actually making the episodes, is done now. So looking forward to hearing about that. But that's pretty much all I have to say. I mean, yeah, that's pretty much all I kind of have to say about that, except for that, at least. Was there anything else you wanted to cover? Because, I mean, I know I want to see the bad guys.
Okay. I think we talked a little bit about this off the air, this is a film that just came out recently. Yeah,
it came out. Well, I mean, it came out like on the 1st of April, so about a month.
Okay, so it's been about a month now. So
I think it's on like lots of home premiere platforms. Like the thing that happened like during the pandemic when suddenly movies you were able to rent them for like premium price.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But
what's got you so curious about this one? I mean, I will admit, I saw the trailer for it when I was out to see Sonic 2, and I'll admit the animation looks good. I remember being impressed by that, but I wasn't like, I feel like that the premise needed to I needed to see more than what the trailer was willing to show me in order to really
It was mainly that. I think like they released like the first 4 minutes or something, or they released like a long clip, and that kind of sold me more than the trailer because I was like,
really? Okay, that fascinates me.
This is how it works, and it just looks really fun. Like that's amazing. It's directed by a French guy, and I think it was like, you know, he's like an ex Gobelin guy, the French animation school Gobelin. But you know, it's kind of spearheaded by him and the a lot of like French animators basically, and it's just taking like a big influence from it seems like I guess like French animation, like anime, like there seems to be a lot of Lupin in it, in the action, and the way the action is kind of like cartoony and, you know what I mean?
I'm getting an image right now, and I'm kind of like, okay. And the design
looks really cartoony. So I'm going to, try and check that out like as soon as I can. I mean, ideally.
All right. Color me curious. I mean, I was kind of like, just the general style and look of the film
had
me about halfway there. And I wasn't sure if the premise or the topic, the story could stick the landing, but who knows? Yeah. Maybe I'm eager to be impressed. I'm eager to have my first initial impression be completely and utterly wrong. So, I didn't expect anything to really come from the live action Sonic movies, but here they are breaking records and doing really super well. So, hello.
That's kind of the weird thing. Like, I had like a lazy day today, and the first movie is currently on Netflix UK, and I was like, I could easily happily just watch that right now. it's a very easy to watch.
It is. Yeah,
sort of
movie. And I love that. Yeah. I love it. I love it that it's a video game movie that got there and is an enjoyable, just kind of easy film to watch and digest, as opposed to being a absolute train wreck nightmare.
Yeah.
That it could have been.
It's kind of almost broken the curse, maybe. Time will tell. So did you have any final thoughts or observations
regarding bad guys, or was there just in general?
I meant for the show.
Oh no, yeah. I mean, I'm curious about, and maybe like I want to see where Spy X Family continues to go, considering again I'm reading ahead of the manga. And I'm pretty far ahead, so I know there are certain characters that are yet to be introduced. curious to see how they introduce them in the anime. But I will say, just as even just kind of doing the anime thing of just adding extra flourishes to a singular, like to a particular chapter, is good stuff. I could easily watch Turning Red, Bell, and when Sonic 2 comes out a bit more widely. Yeah. I'm happy to just get my other friends who are also fans of in the franchise and be like, okay, we're gonna sit down, we're gonna watch this movie because it's fun and it's funny, and I need funny things right now.
That was actually also the other refreshing thing about it, where like I'm much, you know, the heavier sort of movies that are just kind of heavy, I'm less inclined to rewatch those.
Right.
So exactly. I kind of felt like I could, you know, like I watched Turning Red like twice within like the first month that it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Happily, because it was so easy to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's nice that animation is remembering to do that again, because I think it's sort of, maybe I'm glad that it's learning to be fun again, because that's sort of when I prefer it.
Me too. And I'm, you know, when this is just the tip of the iceberg. We still have things like the next part of these Spider-Verse films coming out later this year, which is going to be a blast and a half. I can't wait.
Oh, I have bad news for you, Rachel.
Oh no. Oh dear. What happened?
It got delayed. It's not happening this year.
Oh, fucking flacka.
Yeah.
Trying to avoid cursing on thing, but even though I already did earlier in the episode, but never mind that.
It's gonna come out some point.
I've seen the trailers, I've seen the teasers, it exists. So even if it gets delayed, I'm willing to wait if it means it's going to be the better movie. So, you know,
I kind of agree. I kind of agree. I would much rather wait until it was ready.
Exactly. I mean, do not rush that.
Well, because they kind of...
You hear me, Sony? Don't rush it.
I think they know better.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Than not to.
And I'm curious to see what Lightyear does. It looked... I mean... is interesting looking film.
You know, that's one where I want to watch on Disney Plus. Like
basically if this and Turning Red could change places, you would want for that. Like have Turning Red.
I know why they did it, but it's sort of just like, okay, I'm not excited enough to do that
because
there's not going to be. I don't know what the ending is going to be. And I know that's why you go and see a movie to find out what the ending is. But like, I don't understand like how it can be any deeper. Is it just going to be... Anyway, so...
Yeah, no, I hear you. Loud and clear.
It's a very strange one for me. But like always, I'm kind of curious in that sort of case with a movie like that where like, okay, it's as an assignment. It might be done very well, kind of like how Dan Scanlon did with Monsters University. Like, oh, is that gonna like is he gonna find something very interesting in that you wouldn't expect, and then next movie is gonna get to be, you know, more personal and unique.
Yeah.
So yeah, good. I mean, like.
Who knows?
It could be a great movie. I don't know. But I'm just right now not, you know, chomping at a bit.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, it's hard to know. It's really hard to form. I think we've had this discussion many times before when we've talked about movies that have yet to be released. It's like you can only get so far with the trailer. So hopefully play the cards right and go about it, the project in the right way. We'll see. But, you know, it's a thing. They're putting out into the world. I'm curious to see what happens with it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that just about wraps us up for this episode, this water cooler for today. And I will say this, we'll just kind of, I wish, you know, every one of our listeners, you know, hope you're all staying well, healthy, safe. And I suppose, you know, keep enjoying the things that you love. And we will see you next time on the next episode.
Excellent.
All right. Take care, everyone, and tune in. I hope you'll tune in to the next episode of the AFI podcast when it comes around. Hopefully we will get our schedules all aligned in the, you know, and get the next episode out to you promptly. All right. Take care, everyone.
Hey there, guys, and thank you again for tuning into this episode of the AFA Podcast. If you want to stay up to date with the latest animation news, reviews, and animator interviews, check out the main website at animationforadults.com. Best way to keep an eye out for new and shiny stuff would be to follow us on our social media accounts at Twitter at AFA Blog, Facebook, Pinterest, Tumblr, and Instagram. You're also welcome to go through our podcast catalog wherever you stream your podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Anchor, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Acast. We are always looking for feedback, so feel free to leave us a review, rating, or even send us a voice message via our Anchor page. Or you can even drop us a line at podcasts@animationforadults.com. If you want to support the podcast and the website by proxy, then please zip over to our Patreon page and check out our rewards for becoming a patron. Or if you just want to do us a one-time donation, you can go check out our Ko-Fi page and buy us a virtual cup of coffee. Every little bit helps. And as always, I gotta give a shout-out to our friends at Animation Nights New York, a very special monthly screening event for some of the coolest animated short films and VR experiences from around the world, curated by industry experts and amazing staff who are striving to connect new talent through both live and virtual events. For more information, check them out at www.animationnights.com. Until next time, see you, Space Cowboy.